Oh, hey, how are you?
Great to hear.
Yeah, come in. Make yourself comfortable.
Like a drink?
Sure.
There you go.
Welcome to the Tech Lounge. Shall we begin?
Hello and welcome to another Tech Lounge. I will disturb the ambience of the Tech Lounge by featuring another live interview. This episode, one recorded back in late summer at InfoBip's wonderful Shift Festival, conference, whatever you want to call it, in Zadar in Croatia. It was a fun event, actually. And this was an interview with Nikola, who works with InfoBip on the Startup Tribe program, essentially a startup kind of micro fund offering resources in kind and things like that, but with a really much broader remit than many others into the developing world. And they have a lot of programs into Africa and the global south. So it was actually a very interesting interview. Usual caveat applies with live interviews, a little bit of background noise. I've done my best to reduce it. Enjoy. Before we begin, there's just a few people at the door who've got some things they want to tell you. If you'd rather not hear these interruptions, then please support the show. You can find details in the episode and show notes. I have been talking about and using Raycast almost since it began. It's a drop-in replacement for tools like Alfred and Spotlight, letting you do so many things like trigger applications, trigger commands, do window resizing, and through a broad plugin ecosystem, do all sorts of things. Some of my favorites are changing screen layouts, changing screen resolutions, triggering HomeKit devices, so much more. Actually, creating Trello cards. I should mention creating Trello cards because I maintain that Trello plugin. So you can see I really love Raycast. Raycast now has a pro feature that lets you do all sorts of other things, including some really clever AI features and also the ability to share workflows amongst team members and much more. So if you're interested in finding out more and, of course, getting a little bit of commission for me and the show, you can head on over to this bit.ly link, bit.ly/3BAR059. And, of course, I'll put that link in the show notes.
Berlin. I went to Berlin like twice last year and once this year, and I'm thinking more and more about if I was living in Europe, that would be my favorite city. Am I wrong?
It's changing quite a bit.
Because a lot of people like me think they want to go live there.
We've been there 10 years and definitely seen the change.
Of course, yeah.
German bureaucracy is incredibly frustrating.
Okay.
And slow and quite inefficient. I mean, maybe it's the same here, but you kind of, I don't know, you sort of expect Germany to be better and it really isn't.
You speak German?
Enough.
Okay.
And the economy is slowing. Also, like, just finding a place to live has become...
Because it used to be the only big, cheap city.
It's not cheap.
Yeah.
The prices have jumped up, right? So I spent half my life in Melbourne in Australia, and Melbourne and Sydney have generally been expensive cities. We went back for my wife's mother's birthday in June. We were kind of like, doesn't seem that expensive. Which shows you how ability to kind of come up, because we were like, doesn't seem so bad.
There's a lot of pressure. So it's classic, not gentrification, whatever you want to call it, but like.
A little. I mean, this has been such like getting a place to live. So we haven't left our apartment in 10 years because it's just, especially as we're both contractors, it would be impossible. So it's just like, I don't know. We're actually kind of getting the feeling of wanting to leave. But to be honest with you at the moment, and go where? I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I live in Asia, so I live in Japan for a long time. But I'm like...
I for a whole bunch of reasons, I would go back to Australia, but it's just so far from everything. You really feel it, unfortunately.
Never been like... And you know what? I lived... I mean, last point, I'm not going to bother you too much, but like, I've been living in Japan for like 12 years now.
Yeah.
And in my head, I'm Croatian, so in my head, Australia is still so far.
It's only an hour ahead, but it's still like...
No, but like from Europe is like insanely far. But then in my head, when I'm in Japan for 12 years, in my head, it's equally far from Japan as it is from Europe, which is not true. It's like 7-8 hours, which is manageable. It's not bad. But I still never had a chance to go. I really want to, but...
We can get, like, Jetstar, which is, like, EasyJet.
Yeah. I know.
It's quite easy, but it's funny. I often... People living in Japan, I've only met two people who've gone beyond 2 years.
Okay.
Usually people get... exhausted by the kind of the cultural shift? It's interesting you stayed so long.
Actually, I have a friend who's an Australian reporter, and I just talked about this. She lives in Tokyo, and she works for, she writes for the Financial Times of Australia. What is it, the Financial, like the biggest business paper or something? Oh, Financial Review, maybe, the Financial Business Review. So we're talking about this, and then, it's a beautiful place, but it's really, it's alien.
Yeah.
I said, everywhere else you go in the world, there's some familiarity. I'm sure if I go to Australia or go to Brazil, there's something familiar to it. Japan is just alien, but it's beautiful.
Yeah,
but
no,
it's,
I like
it's
it.
Hard, but yeah. I mean, there's a lot of, Tokyo is like huge, like 35 million people. There's
I really like the Osaka. We were in Osaka in 2019.
Yeah.
I really like the Osaka.
Osaka's cool. It's very different. It's very different.
It's manageable. Rough. Busy, but manageable. Busy.
And a bit
like
more
Tokyo.
And a bit more rowdy, like more friendly, more rowdy in a way,
which
is kind of cool for Japan.
Yeah, actually, you're right. It was. Yeah. It was more fun.
Yeah, yeah.
Without feeling like people were watching you for having fun.
Yeah. No, I end up, it's a great place, but it has a lot of upsides, but I just landed. I always thought by description Osaka would be more my kind of city, but I just landed up in Tokyo, and I was in Tokyo, and now I'm Tokyoite. And
so, I mean, let's lead into why we're talking. No, it's good. How InfoBip is Croatian, and you're running the startup program?
Yeah,
but from Japan. So how does that work?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I just happened to live there, and I mean, InfoBip is primarily a global company.
Yeah.
So we have like about 74 or 76 offices around the world, including Japan. So it does make sense. And we cover all markets, 190 markets. So it doesn't really matter because we work with people all around the world. Most of the team, so I run the developer experience department, which is basically involves the startup, the InfoBip Startup Tribe, what we call the program, the Perk program, the Shift conference, and the DevRel team and the Dev Content teams. Yeah. So it's about, let's say, four teams under this hat. And then we are all of them mostly in Europe, some of them a little bit in the US and in Africa now as well.
Awesome. Okay, good. Good to hear. It's something that is, I noticed there was something on the program, and it's, if there was one kind of positive from all the online events during kind of the COVID lockdown era, it was that people from places like Africa were able to join, because usually it's too expensive or there's visa issues and things. Mm. And there's so much talent. That often is, it's not ignored, but it's not present very much.
I mean, I can talk about this. Like for a long time, I used to live in Africa, but in my previous lives, and we started going more with Africa because InfoBip is quite unusual for its size. Like we're a big tech company, but not like Google size. Yeah. Like, you know, it's like 3,500 people now, but we are like, have these offices in the most non-usual places for tech companies to open. So, you know, we have an office in Kenya, in Tanzania, we have an office in Vietnam, and we have an office in Indonesia, which is, okay, they're all big markets, but also in Peru and Paraguay and in Mexico and Costa Rica. Like, not many tech companies open offices in Zambia. Because it's very simply related, because we have markets everywhere and we have partnership with telcos. So we went early on to make...
And especially in Africa, telcos.
Exactly.
And the whole SMS... I don't know if that's still really what they're doing. I actually have a friend who works for a company in Mozambique doing mobile medical stuff.
Yeah.
And he's always been very into the kind of mobile money industry and things. And I think it's changed a bit, but that kind of makes sense then.
But some things, it's beautiful about technology, how it finds a way, kind of like water, like Bruce Lee stuff. But it's like, you know, M-Pesa in East Africa, they had it for a decade. Plus, and they've been sending money to each other, which we still can't do, like, you know, here, technically. Like, you can't send money over SMS, over M-Pesa, and the system works really well. And it's been going for 10 years. It's insane. And only now WhatsApp is piloting in Brazil some sending money over WhatsApp and so on. So it will happen, of course. Yeah. But it exists in Kenya for like 10 years.
Yeah.
Just because they had the need, because they had no credit cards, you know. So it was the...
Yeah.
So that was the thing. And so we started going more to Africa, and we have a lot of African startups. It's good because in the program, because we have feet on the ground. So that's really kind of interesting to us. So we do a lot of, we're screening a movie now at 11 on the startup stage about our African.
I think I saw that.
So that's like.
Started in the program, I mean.
Yeah, yeah. So that's a lot. We'll bring some popcorn as well. But like, so it's a, we went to this movie, we did it with Al Jazeera, and when we went to like four different cities in Africa and talking about the ecosystem. But we go often now, and we have team members in Nairobi, but also we go to Nigeria and Ghana, and we did Uganda, and also North Africa, Egypt, Morocco,
yeah, yeah, just yeah, places. Yeah, yeah.
Awesome. So it's very exciting to go there and see. And so yeah. I think no one maybe has this reach to, because in the end, you need to have boots on the ground. It does, yeah. I mean, you don't have to, but it does help.
Yeah, oh, definitely.
It's a difference from just like, oh, we can run the program from here.
Techno-colonialism, you
know? Yeah. I mean, we can send emails from here and apply for our startup program, and we give you some product credits, and you can use the products, and we can build products together, whatever. Yeah, but it's different, you know, when you do a meetup there, when you meet people, when you go to the meetups, et cetera.
Yeah. So, I mean, you've already kind of given a rough indication of how the startup program is working, but how does it work? How many startups? And you mentioned some regions they're in, but
of course.
What's kind of the general geographical spread?
It's a very simple concept as well. It's a perk program, like, you know, AWS for startups or
any startup. Okay.
Where we give, but because InfoWeb traditionally hasn't been oriented towards, let's say, developers and startups. Traditionally, InfoWeb is B2B enterprise company. So you're like a big company, you need this global, you need a solution and communication platform, we plug you in. But now in the last four years, you can actually create an account, you know, swipe your card and start sending SMS or create what chatbots in WhatsApp or whatever, one of the many services we do. And then we started launching a startup tribe, and because not many startups would know at the time about us, we started like, we're really generous, and it's like, there's like $20,000 in products, and some startups that we see as huge potential, we give up to $60,000-$70,000.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not going to make or break a startup, let's face it. And to be perfectly honest, why we do it for future clients.
Yeah.
That's very simple.
Yeah.
But not only, and that's a good part. We have a couple of startups that we build products together and partnerships on top. We call this the partnership route.
Yeah.
So we have some great startups that also work in Africa, and they're actually European, but then also you mentioned digital health. They're monitoring blood pressure for, like, usually there are older patients, they don't like apps, so they send notifications through the platform on like WhatsApp, SMS, and then you just every day you enter your blood pressure. When you come to the doctor, you have the whole thing, so you don't have to, you know, just measure it once. But anyway, so we have this, we connect some startups to investors. This is like we partner with a lot of investors, VCs and accelerators. Recently we connected like a Kenyan startup with like a Nigerian Japanese investor. It's not a scam, it's true. Small digression. I used to work for a company, like a fintech, that the founders were Croatian, South African, Nigerian, and German. And I was like, this just sounds like the beginning of a scam story. Yeah. I was always telling them, like,
I'm sure they get sick of people saying
So basically the numbers, we started this about 3 years ago. We have about 1,200 applications so far. So that's pretty good. We're very happy.
How many years ago?
3 years ago.
3 years ago.
The program. And we have about 1,200 applications, which is roughly maybe one a day if you look at it that way. And I'm super proud of, 122 countries.
Yeah.
So like we have startups that applied from Peru and South Sudan and Mozambique and East Timor as well. So like not the usual. Like, of course, the most, we have a lot of business in Latin America. So we have a lot of startups from Brazil and Colombia. US is number one still. Disproportionately a lot from this region because it's where our brand is the strongest, I think. You know, Croatia, Bosnia, Serbia, Slovenia, and so on. But then 122 countries. We accepted in the program about 450 startups so far. We gave out $2.7 million in products.
Yeah.
Just, and there's no strings attached or anything.
Yeah. I guess it has to be available if you don't have a partnership with a local telco, then it's not so.
Yeah, no, but like we do all the products that we do, like you can do the CPaaS, so you can, you know, use SMS for verification, or you can build a customer support chatbot in WhatsApp. So all you can use it for any of those.
Yeah.
Or if you have to send, for example, SMS externally. But there's also an African startup here, Pindo. They spoke on stage yesterday, for example, what they do. We're kind of competitors, but then we're partners because they better connectivity in Rwanda.
Yeah.
But then they use us for other countries if they have customers they want to use, and then also use our SaaS and they resell it.
Yeah.
So it's in this industry, it's kind of weird. Our competitors are also always our partners.
Yeah.
Because we own some routes, they own some routes. Yeah. You can't close the routes for anyone.
So. Yeah, there are a few competitors in this space, but
I mean, it's not disclosable, but some of them might be clients of other, you know, it's like we have to rely.
Especially because, when you've got apartment talkers anyway, there's always going to be.
Of course. And yeah, so we did like 2.7 million dollars in thing, but we try what's important because we have so many, call them frontier or emerging startup ecosystems. What's very important for us is not just, okay, products is the easiest for us to give. Like, so this is the products, you know, you need our products, you apply, it's a very simple process. And then next day you have, you know, $5,000 in your account and you start using it. And then, but then we realized in a lot of startups are super messy and they need all kinds of support, especially. So we tried to do educations as in a partnership with investors. So we could do all these meetups and invite them and we come over. All of the startups get free tickets for this shift or any of the shifts. And some of them even get the booth and some of them.
That's actually what I was going to ask is how many of them exhibiting are?
Well, there's a startup expo, so they're all our startups. They're only in the startup expo. So they apply and only as much places we have there, they get the booth. And then some of them get on stage. As I said, we connected 4 or 5 startups so far with investors.
Yeah.
I mean, we do this for free. We're not like brokers or anything. We just happen to know one or the other. Yeah. And it's kind of a very primitive marketplace where we're like, oh, we'll check out all these our partners and then do your due diligence. And they were like, oh, I want to talk to this and send us the deck. And then we send it to the, but it works. Like it worked a few times. And then and we think like this, we provide actual value to startups. Like, you know, we found you an investor, which is negligible in a way.
No.
And then partnerships, some of them use our networks to enter new markets and clients. Because for example, you know, we have a big team in Brazil and they work with, I don't know, if you have a fintech that's not true, but because it didn't come to us. But for example, we will work on some other deals. There's a big Hungarian startup that does financial crime prevention. They're the biggest Hungarian startup. They raised quite a lot of help, like 100 million. But they come to us through the program. And then they work with banks. They work with Revolut, Nubank, and they use our number lookup to check if the numbers are real.
Yeah.
And then they want to work with Itaú, which is like a big bank in Brazil and a big client of ours. Yeah. So, and then we connect our account executive for Itaú and we're like, oh, this is our partner. Yeah. So we try to provide kind of, I don't know, assistance or value for them that way too.
Yeah.
It's not always easy, but yeah.
And the credits are like it's like a one-off kind of credit thing or just some they roll per year or depending on that?
It's interesting. It's a learning process for us. In the beginning, we were really generous because we wanted to get the name out there. In my head, this was a bit like Gmail versus Hotmail, you know, kind of situation. Like, I give them more. Like, and then and it's all about timing.
Yeah.
Some startups, and it's so interesting to know, is like we should get the data one day. How long does it take them? Some of them are like have a no-brainer because startups are messy. They're product at the same time, fundraising, you know, doing whatever. And I was like, it's like a mobility startup. Like, you know, Uber and Bolt are our clients. So this is a no-brainer. If you have anything mobility for us, like you can use us. It's going to, and they're like, oh yeah, it makes sense. And then 6 months, nothing happens because they're like, I don't know, fundraising or building.
Or just 1-2 people.
Yeah, exactly. So we realized now we have much more experience. So now we know to judge like the startup, for example, how much they're going to use or what stage. Also what happens with us, if you're not careful, like people can take over. Like actually we got some like basically attacks on your traffic. Hmm. So if you're not really on the information security side, if you're like kids that are kind of careless, then people tend to steal your money.
Yeah.
Then we have to top them up or something. So we realized if you...
Oh, from them.
Account. Okay. Like if they're just not good in protecting their account you know, creating a password or something like this, it's pretty... And so we're trying to... Then we notice if they're like... We tell them we give you in tranches and instead of just in case because otherwise you don't have money. We can tell on our side. I see the traffic and I see startup that uses, I don't know, sends 3,000... messages or whatever a day, and then one day is 120. And I'm like, it's no good. Something happened.
And how many convert from kind of startup tribe to customers?
Oh,
3 years is maybe a little soon, but I don't know.
No. It's we have in terms of I don't know the exact. I'm gonna say so far 40 something. I think.
Okay.
The last thing.
Percent or?
No. So out of the 450, so it'll be basically 10% so far.
Yeah.
The conversions, but revenue-wise, we're doing really well. Like it's like 100% growth year over year now. And I mean, the idea, this is obviously very long term. The whole idea for stuff is like, but then what we're excited about the partnership stuff And so there's like three or four startups that actually build products on top of us. One of them is also here, Orange Pill.
Oh yeah.
And they for example, are using our platform heavily and then also entering. I mean, they lived in Colombia before, but they're also working on this. So there's this, and then future, I mean, my vision is for the future is it's good to be close to startup because of the innovation. And then also maybe future, hopefully good earlier M&A and then also investment. And at some point we are at this stage where we should start investing in startups.
Okay.
And then
so that's something that's kind of for the future. That's not something you
do. Yes, I mean, timing is always hard to predict, of course, yeah. but like the idea was like, of course, we meet all the startups and then some of them will be really good and we definitely make sense, but we have to also position it really well because, you know, CVCs don't have a great reputation. So we're trying to build like an external VC and they're slow, I think. But so we're trying to see this, and I think, and also M&A and acquiring some technologies. We acquire some smaller companies as well. And I think it makes sense. And then all the innovation that comes there. So we played with a couple of startups. We invested in a few in the past, but like completely off the, you know, of the balance sheet, not connected to the program. And so this is the idea, like in creating this. In terms of conversions, yeah, I think it's not just, yeah, it really for us, of course, it's the very easy path where it's like, okay, yeah, they apply, they use the money, and then suddenly they start spending and then we're super happy and they grow really big, they become Uber and we're like, yeah, sure. But then there's so many stops in between that rely on the brakes and our products are super complicated and regulatory.
Yeah.
And we have to be with them along the way.
Yeah.
And then one of them, maybe one day, will become like the next Bolt. We learned the lesson. We met Rappi, the huge South American behemoth, like they do everything. And Bolt, these are examples of startups that we met very early on. And then they started using us. And we see how you can, on business side, how you can grow from like, I don't know, I'm not working that account, so I'm just guessing, but like, or you can grow an account from like $5,000 a month or a year to millions of dollars just within a few years.
Yeah.
And if you have a company like Bolt, right?
Yeah. And for anyone listening who doesn't know who Bolt is, it's kind of the European Uber.
Yeah, European Uber. It works.
Most people in Europe prefer it.
So. Yeah, yeah. In Africa as well, by the way.
Oh, really?
They're huge and they're super successful in Africa, in new markets. I see them in Ghana, in Kenya. Yeah. Like, I think they're even stronger.
I heard a funny story from the founder. I'll tell you in a minute. Okay. For people who are interested in maybe applying, what's the, like, minimum requirements?
So we're very flexible, very, very flexible. Because of the fact that we didn't have this before and not many people know about us because we are in your hood of, you know, the communication hood, the communication part of the hood of your car or your startup or your company. But it's an application process where we basically ask you for your deck and some basic information like how many employees you have, where you're from, if you have some revenue, if you raise some money. It's literally 5-6 minutes to fill in if you have a deck. And then the conditions, when we set it up, we put up to 100 employees and up or no more than $5 million investment.
Okay.
This is some kind of criteria, but we made exceptions. So honestly, like if we see that there's going to be a good opportunity and that it's going to be a good partner and good startup, yeah, we're happy to talk to you. And of course, if they're too big, then they're probably material for our mid-market teams.
And what's too small?
So this is a very good point. A very good, actually, from our perspective, what we learned, it's better to be too early than too late.
Yeah.
So if someone uses our like other solutions or competitions, or it's harder to take it out, regardless of the economic reasoning or whatever. And too early means you might have to wait, but it's better. So ideally, somehow we noticed that our ideal applicant would be a startup that probably raised a seed round, that has some customers and has some products.
Yeah.
And now they're trying to scale it through like and improve all this communication way and automate all that stuff.
Yeah.
So that's the perfect timing for us. But no exceptions. We had like very early on. And then what happens as well, it's our products are very complicated. I think a lot of people the company don't know them all because they keep evolving. Now we have AI and chatbots that you can build with AI, sorry. And you do like, so startups come to us very often like, oh, we need like, you know, we know what you do. We check it out. We need SMS authentication. I'm doing e-commerce and I need to send.
Yeah.
But then we tell them like, oh, but why just SMS? So a lot of people completely discount this omni-channel approach globally, like everywhere, startups, non-startups and something. And we tell them like, well, okay, but why don't you also use like moments where you can communicate or automate the whole journey with across channels. So you can send them, you know, if they put something in a cart, you can tell them like, oh, send them an email and then they don't open it, but then you can send them a WhatsApp email, like message if you have a phone number. And then if you're in Brazil or in Africa, that's huge because everyone uses WhatsApp.
Yeah.
And then you can automate this and it's actually much, much better for you. And then they go like, or we have customer support sauce, you know, like you can do customer support. And they were like, oh yeah, I actually need something. I didn't know you guys do that. Or I didn't know you guys do like chatbots and stuff like that. So, and then we can actually create more stuff for them and actually improve their...
Actually help them optimize their flow instead of just...
I mean, startups really, my key takeaway, I mean, I ran startups and worked with startups for a long time. Startups are very, what I said before, very messy. They're very all over the place. So for this, like sometimes to me, it was like, I saw great startups, great stuff and everything. And I was like, sorry. How was it?
Very good.
Was supposed to say. But ciao, drago. And I was like the key takeaway for me was like, you guys are like, this is great. I love it. And I was like, just, this is going to help you so much. Not because I'm selling anything. Just you're like, oh yeah, I know. But like, you know, it's like, you know, fundraising product, new hiring people. And I'm like, no, but use this. It's going to your reach. And I don't know. And no brainer. But, you know, at one point they'll understand and you can't, you know, you can't tell people what to do. But I've seen situations where like, oh, come on, I'm not telling you anything. Just like, we'll give you more money. Like, it's just like, I'm telling you, this is going to be a great story and stuff like this. But yeah. So yeah, slowly it's a progress. Like luckily the salespeople in the company, as I always joke for the startup team, I tell them they're reverse salesmen. So actually they have to give free stuff away. And then the salespeople are not happy. And they go like, how much of our money did you spend this year? And I'm like, oh yeah, it's all for the overall good, for, you know, long term.
It's in kind. You're not really spending it. It's fine.
Of course. Yeah. And one thing that we don't understand, we even had consultants that has, like, raised this issue. It's in kind. So for us, of course, depending on a product, depending how much it costs us and everything.
Yeah.
But it's also the people don't use it immediately.
No,
even when
sure.
I have to report to the board and stuff like this.
Yeah.
Like sometimes we give a startup $10,000 and they use it in 2 months, and sometimes they start using it in 6 months, and sometimes they use it so slowly and then they use it for 2 years. So, you know, it's not like actually, yeah. So
it's almost like startups don't know how to do accounting. I don't know.
Yeah. Or me. Like, I was like, you know, I'll figure it out. Like, so we do that when we have a company. Yeah. So awesome. Yeah.
Cool. Awesome.
Yeah. Let me know. I give you the numbers from my head, but I have all the numbers.
Ah, it's just fine.
And broken number, industry, country, how many partners.
Some things on the website would be interesting to dig into a little bit. Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah.
So anything about startups that we do. So we're not super original. We are a startup program that started like any other, just from scratch. We just called it Startup Tribe because everyone is so boring with the names. It's all Amazon for startups, Google for startups. Twilio startups that doesn't exist, by the way, anymore.
And it's one of your competitors.
Yes. What a guy. Oh, I didn't know that. And for startups, Stripe has Atlas, which is slightly different. Yeah. But all the names, I was like, come on, and we can come up with a better name. And then somehow it happened. This is Impro Startup Tribe. And we're really trying to, and provide additional. Now we're going to build a community.
Yeah.
I mean, the community, we have like a channel in Discord where we like organize office hours and talk.
Yeah. Yep,
and provide some kind of support. And some of the other programs are doing really well. I know my friends are in the AWS startup program and they have all this kind of, these are seasoned entrepreneurs. They're not like, you know, kids trying to do something. And they tell me like, oh, actually, like, you know, every couple of weeks we have this educational stuff, like, and some really cool guy comes and like, or someone, and it's actually useful. It's not like, you know.
Yeah.
So we're trying to do
that. Yeah, that stuff is often more useful than credits as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
Especially with AWS, we can get through those credits pretty quickly.
So there you go. All right. Awesome.
Awesome.
Thank you so much.
So that was it. That was our guest today. Thank you very much for joining me in the Tech Lounge. I have been Christian Schiller. If you want to know more about Tech Lounge, head on over to christianschiller.com or please tell your friends about us. It's quiet and cozy in here, but the more listeners, the merrier. You can find more at christianschiller.com/podcast or in the show notes or episode notes, wherever you found this podcast. Thank you very much for joining me, and you're most welcome next time.